Blog Talk Radio.
Hang it up. Tigers would draw. It was covered on the last episode of Teeing It Up. This is the end of that week to digest things. The 7-day mourning period of sorts for those who were expecting Tiger last week. Tiger made an announcement today creating Tiger Woods Ventures, which is now a one brand company to handle all of his various business ventures, including his foundation, golf course design business, restaurant, and all the events he runs, from golf tournaments to things like Tiger Jam and his other fundraisers. We got Jets tonight on Monday Night Football in a must-win game. If they lose this game, they're out of the playoffs. It's as simple as that. I don't think they can recover going 1-5, and that makes the Baltimore game on Sunday that much more difficult. We have Seth Rothman with us, coming up on the show momentarily, and we have the great Brendan Steele getting his first PGA Tour win in a while since the Safeway Open. At the Safeway Open, his first since the Valero Texas Open in 2011. A much-needed victory and a popular victory for Brendan Steele, his first win since he had to go away from the anchor putting style, which for a lot of people is really tough to do. In a week that saw Patton Kizzire almost get his first PGA Tour win. He'll get there. He's way too talented not to get his first PGA Tour win. It'll happen. Just got to hit more fairways down the stretch. Phil Mickelson missed too many fairways to win. It's as simple as that. Phil could have won this event. Putted well enough to do it, even though he missed a couple down the stretch on Sunday, but just drove it wildly. He said that's his number one priority for the offseason, and you can see why. And Paul Casey and Scott Piercy continued their hot play from the end of the 2015-16 PGA Tour season. This is the 2016-17 PGA Tour season. And they now go to Malaysia for the CIMB Classic. Starts Wednesday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. All four rounds in prime time. On Golf Channel, late night prime time though, not prime time, but late night prime time. And then Shanghai next week for the HSBC World Golf Championship event. There where you'll see a lot of the big good guys come back and make one of their few appearances in the fall. We are going to take a 30-second timeout, get Bob Costas and then Seth Rothman. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. By the way, 77 gorgeous degrees here today in Palm Beach, Jersey. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and iTunes. We will see you in 30 seconds after Bob Costas.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
We're joined by Seth Rothman, who does many wonderful things for many wonderful people, as does Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw is a gift to this world, a gift to the baseball world. And frankly, Seth, I believe that we may see Clayton Kershaw start and close all the rest of the games in the playoffs. What do you think?
I wouldn't mind seeing that. I mean, Clayton Kershaw, at this point, it has to be said, he might be the best pitcher of this era. He might be the best pitcher in baseball over the last 30 years. I mean, he is sensational. Everything he does, he is just a complete joy to watch. I remember he pitched against the Yankees earlier this season, and you know, it was back when the Yankees really needed to win to try to make the postseason. And yet, I was left wanting Kershaw to pitch well because I wanted to see him. You know, we get so few chances in the American League to watch him pitch. I actually wanted to see him pitch well, even though it was going to hurt the Yankees, you know, postseason crunch.
And it's interesting, too, because, you know, you cover baseball every day. You see it. You've seen guys come back from injuries too soon. You've seen guys wait. You've seen guys take days off just because they don't feel like it. And here's Kershaw, who has an injury that, frankly, for a lot of people would have ended their season. The Dodgers were so scared when he got hurt in the middle part of the year just because of how valuable he is for their team. And you never know what kind of form somebody will come back in, and he's come back being Clayton Kershaw.
And I think the thing that amazes me is, you know, when Clayton Kershaw faces you, you know you're losing that day's game. I mean, there's no question about it. As a player, I think, you know, even the players are like, well, we'll do our best today, but we're probably not going to win this game. Like, it's just, he dominates you on the mound, but I think what's even more impressive is the way he dominates you in your own mind, because you really go up there with almost no chance to win because you've almost psyched yourself out of the game already.
And you know, what he did in Game 5 coming in the close inside that NLDS, you know, not many pitchers in general can come back off basically no rest and do what he did. But, you know, we've seen it as fans in this area have seen the Yankees for all those years. When starters become guys out of the pen in the playoffs, it's a tough transition. You know, you have to kind of, you know, be careful with them, start them in an inning instead of not smack in the middle of an inning. There's, you know, ways you have to finesse them and work them that, you know, most relievers don't have to. And for him to come in and get his proper warm-up and feel okay and then come in and dominate like he did to close that game out was just remarkable.
But not even that, Jeremy. Like, he came in at a difficult spot, and he still got the job done in this dominating fashion. He's a really, really special guy to watch.
You know, I came into this series thinking the Dodgers were clearly thinking the Cubs were clearly the better team, and Kershaw was going to be the only piece that would keep them in it. The Cubs have been less dominant than I thought they would be, although they did explode in Game 1 eventually. But it does seem like Kershaw is going to be the piece that keeps the Dodgers in this.
He will, but, you know, again, and that's the only thing. Like, he can't pitch every day.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to try to get him to pitch as much as they can, but ultimately, I think it's not only the fact that I think the Cubs have the better team. It's all the little things that the Cubs do well. I was reading an article about how they were built with defense in mind, and so few teams are built that way these days. They're so fundamentally strong. I mean, you look at what Baez did last night. They are so fundamentally sound in every aspect of the game. I think that's why you look at the Cubs right now, and I still think that they're the clear favorites because, A, Kershaw's not going to pitch every day, and, B, the Cubs are just – that's a team that was built for the postseason. And a team that won 104 games and was built for the postseason, that's an awfully good baseball team.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how this stuff works. And, you know, it's interesting. Wrigley Field has seen a lot of baseball in its time. It's a park that has had to be finessed into the 20th century, the 21st century. It's got now scoreboards that were highly controversial. It's still a crummy place. The Fox people were saying how tough it is for them to get all the technology that they want to get into these broadcasts into Wrigley Field. It's just not built for that kind of stuff. Yet when you watch a game and you see the Ivy and you hear that place, these guys know, these fans know what kind of special team they have.
I almost want them to show these NLCS games at Wrigley. I almost want them to show them in black and white. because it just I almost feel like Wrigley Field is the black and white ballpark. Like you're supposed to watch games at Wrigley Field in black and white. It's just it is such an incredible, and I've never been there. I want to go at some point. But even watching it on TV, the game just, you know, it's almost like watching a hockey game at Madison Square Garden. Like, the game just feels special at Wrigley Field. And you know, that's just the way I feel about it. Like, it's such a great place to just sit back and watch a game. And it's truly, I think, the most special ballpark in baseball right now.
And hey, even Dodger Stadium isn't young, you know? I mean, that place where this series goes now is not like it's, you know, a brand new spanking ballpark. I mean, this place has been around for a while.
It's a nice stadium, but it does not hold a candle to Wrigley Field in terms of the way it makes you feel as a baseball fan.
I want to talk pace of play. There was an inning in the ALDS that took an hour because of pitching changes. Mr. I think his name was Baez the other night for the Dodgers pitches slower than any pitcher I've ever seen. I mean, there were full minutes between pitches sometimes. Rob Manfred has basically said that the pace of play initiatives have flat out failed this year in baseball. I think it's why you may see a limit on pitching changes. But for as good as these playoffs have been, some of these games are just so slow.
They are. I mean, I think part of that is the playoffs. You know, batters are taking a little bit longer in between pitches. Pitchers take a little bit longer in between pitches because every pitch is so important. I don't know how you do it in the postseason because I do think that listen, guys do need that time in some way. You know, I don't think the regular season was that bad this season. I mean, September's a problem. September has always been a problem. They need to figure out what to do with expanded rosters. We've talked about there's certainly a few things that they can do there, but I don't know. I mean, the playoffs are always long. I mean, I remember when the Yankees were in the playoffs a couple of seasons ago. Like, the games are all 4 hours long, and you just deal with that because it's the playoffs. So I'd be hesitant to try and change too much about the playoffs. I think it's the regular season where I'd like to see games try and get down back down to the 245 to 250 range.
How do you change September call-offs? Because you're always going to have some teams that are experimenting and trotting out Triple-A teams, and then you're going to have the teams, especially playoff race teams that are trying to mix and match as best they can using the full roster to their advantage.
So I think what you do, Jeremy, and this is the idea that I've had and is the idea that I've heard a lot of other people say lately, is it's like a hockey team. You can call up as many guys as you want. You can call up all 40 guys, but you have to declare your 25 players for every game. So now what that means is your four starters that are not pitching that day are off that day's roster. If you want to rest one of your big stars for a day, you can take him off of your roster. So you'll still be able to take some of the rookies and make sure they can get into games. Any bullpen arms that you know are not going to pitch on a certain day, you can give them the day off. So it would still give you basically a 30 or 31-man roster for every game. It's just that you know there are six or seven guys you're not going to play on this day, so you would take them out of your active lineup. But I think that's the way you fix it you force teams to declare an active roster for every game. That's what they do in soccer. Teams have a 24-man roster. They have to bring it down to 18 for a game day. That's what they do in hockey. You have 23 players. You have to only dress 20. So I think that's where it's going. And it sounds like there's a little bit of push for that to happen in baseball. But that's what I would like to see them do.
Are you a fan of limiting the amount of pitching changes during the regular season?
No. I think that fundamentally changes the sport too much. That strategy is part of baseball. Listen, you only have a certain amount of relievers every day.
Right.
I don't think you should ever do something like that. I think that's far too drastic, and I think that's taking a machete to a problem that needs a scalpel.
Are you a fan of changing the strike zone, which is something that's been discussed, or using the pitch clock, which we've seen tried in some of the minor leagues.
I'm a fan of them calling the strikes on the way it was meant to be called. I think, we have a situation now where every umpire strike zone is different, and that's something I don't like. I think the strike zone should be the same every single day. So I think they should call the strikes on the way it was intended to be called. And your other one was, I forgot already.
Pitch clock.
Pitch clock, no. Again, it's just, we don't need that many fundamental changes. Like, if you look at the length of TV timeouts, those have been growing. And also in the playoffs, like, those are a lot longer than in the regular season. But if you look at national TV games, those are always 10 minutes longer. Why? Because every commercial break is 45 seconds longer. Well, you have 18 commercial breaks over a 9-inning game. Well, that's an extra 15 minutes right there. So I think TV has something to do with it. Now I shouldn't say anything. I work for the YES Network.
Right.
But that has something to do with it, too. So what do you do about that? I don't think this issue needs to be handled with a machete, as I said a minute ago. Like, I think there are a few things you can do to speed up the game, but I also think you don't need to fundamentally change the way the game is played.
Let's talk about a different aspect of television. What the Dodgers did in the NLDS was frankly remarkable. They won their first ever series in franchise history without Vin Scully in the booth for Keith Olbermann. It's a shocking stat. The new world.
Boy, I was watching. He actually had me in tears when he did his last game from Dodger Stadium. The way he serenaded the fans and everything. I mean, it was such a treat listening to him. And on YES during our post game shows, a couple of times, what we did is we built a highlight package, and we did not ask Bob to narrate it.
Right.
We just played the highlight package with a natural Vin Scully sound. And it was just so good, and it was he was amazing. I mean, the best sports broadcaster in American history.
From a selfish perspective, is there part of you that kind of wishes he would call the playoffs like he normally would?
Sure, but I mean, we wouldn't get a chance to hear him anyway, so I think that's a more question for somebody who lives out. Listen, we had so much time to hear him call a game I hope he enjoys his retirement. He is certainly somebody that has earned it.
That he has. Who wins this World Series?
I gotta go with the Cubs. I mean, I said it earlier, but they're so fundamentally sound in everything that they do. They were built with defense in mind. Their defense is phenomenal. I just think they're the team to beat right now.
Who wins the ALCS, by the way?
Cleveland's already up to nothing, so I guess I'm not going out on too much of a limb, but I say Cleveland.
Yeah. Me too. Nice try, Toronto, but it'll come around.
Yeah, Jose Bautista can keep whining about collusion or whatever it is. It's not going to save his team.
Yeah, seriously. How do you think the World Cup of Hockey played out?
I lost interest in it fairly quickly.
Stop right there. That's fascinating because, as the folks out there know who have listened to Teeing It Up for a while, Seth loves his hockey as much as anyone. And what's interesting is that you're not the only person I know who did not get what I think was the expected pop that the hockey people thought, would happen. So that interests me. So talk on.
I think the reason was you could tell that it was not the Olympics, and it was played like it wasn't the Olympics. Why are the Olympics so much fun? Because the Olympics mean something to these guys. I don't think the World Cup of Hockey, they played it probably at a better pace than I thought they would. It certainly did not feel like a preseason tournament. I mean, the quality of the hockey was a little bit preseason-y, but, there's no way to change that. It did not have that importance that the Olympics had. I also never really got into it because I didn't want to get into it. And I think a lot of hockey fans feel this way. Hockey fans want the Olympics. Hockey fans want the NHL to stop for 2 weeks to go to the Olympics. And people who support the sport of hockey, I believe, think that the Olympics are so good for the NHL that they'd be stupid to not go to the Olympics.
Right.
And that is kind of, you know, the NHL floated this World Cup of, or this World Championship Cup hockey, whatever they call it. They did it because they wanted to do that instead of the Olympics.
Right.
And you saw the rink empty for a lot of games, half full for a lot of games. I don't think it took to the fans the way that the NHL hoped it would. And I'm hoping that sent them a message of, you know, we as fans and as people who care about the sport want the league to continue to go to the Olympics.
That was my next question, which is, if you see what Gary Bettman has said, it's been very pessimistic statements. And this goes back a couple of years, and it's been over money and, you know, marketing or some kind of revenue numbers. You know, do you think these numbers, which were paltry ratings, even for ESPN, which the NHL also hoped would kind of give them a visibility boost, you know, it was not what anybody, I think, wanted for numbers-wise. Do you think this has given enough of a boost for the powers that be to say, hold on a second, let's do this?
No, because I don't, because I don't, I'll just say it. I don't think they're smart enough to see that.
Right.
You know, I hope that I'm wrong. I think that they do not want to go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I think that is the big issue here, is not necessarily the money or whatnot. I don't think they want to. I think that they think that going to the Olympics hurts them because they're not making money off of it. When, in my estimation, and again, I don't look at their books, so I don't know this for sure, but in my estimation, going to the Olympics may not give them money right now, but it will give them money down the line. It will help the sport of hockey grow, and anything that grows the sport is good for the league, and I'm not sure that these guys see it that way. But I believe strongly that anything that helps the sport of hockey is good for the NHL, and that is what needs to be done. The Olympics are great for hockey, amazing for hockey. I mean, what was the rating of that USA-Canada championship game in Vancouver?
It was
NFL numbers, like, right? And you saw the Olympic bump the following, at the end of that Stanley Cup playoff. So I just think that they need to go to the Olympics. I think they need the Olympics more than the Olympics need them, and that's why they're going to lose this argument no matter which way they go. You know, they're not going to get what they want out of the Olympics, but the Olympics will survive without them. And I think that's something that the NHL, I don't think, realizes right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I think sometimes, and you're seeing this right now when it comes to the NFL, is, you know, with celebration penalties and these stupid social media rules and all this other stuff that's happening right now in the NFL and poor officiating, is sometimes they're so revenue-headed and they're so, you know, trying to figure out, hey, can we get, you know, X amount more money, that I think sometimes they lose the sight of making what is the smart decision. And I think the smart decision for the NHL would be to go back to the Olympics in South Korea in 2018. And I think the springboard off that, Seth, is that, you know, you look at this expansion thing with Las Vegas. Is that the smartest move for the league long term?
You know what? A lot of people disagree with me. I actually think it's a great move for the NHL. I really do. Now, the players need to be careful when they go out there, because certainly, you know, there are dangers in Las Vegas for players. But I think in terms of the fan base, first of all, the fan base out there is really revved up about it. They had this huge ticket, season ticket sell without any hotels or anything. Like, it was all people who built, who basically bought out almost the entire building. So I just, you know, I think that organization is going to make so much money. The arena is right on the strip, so you're going to have, you're going to have people going to Las Vegas for a long weekend while their team comes in. I just think it's going to be huge for them.
By the way, the 2010 gold medal game was the most watched hockey game in 30 years. It got 27.6 million viewers. It was the most watched game since the gold medal game from Lake Placid in 1980. And
right.
The and that was only eclipsed by the semifinal, which got 34.2.
Yeah, I mean, when
viewers.
I mean, they were.
It got me enthralled.
That's the miracle on ice. Like,
yeah,
that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
When you're leveling with the miracle on ice, I think the Olympics do a pretty good thing for the NHL, and I hope they agree with that.
Yeah, that they do. And I still say that if the U.S. had won that game, that, you know, I'm not sure how much more the impact would have been, because it was obviously huge and it was sensational drama. But I can't imagine what even more impact that would have had, especially on this country, because you can tote gold medal winners so much more than you can tote silver medal winners.
But I also feel like, you know, hockey in this country is growing. I mean, you look at some of the players that are joining up into the NHL now. There's a lot of really good talent coming from the United States now. So I'd be, you know, and again, that was 6 years ago now. So an 18-year-old was 12 back then. Austin Matthews is an American. So I don't know that I agree with that.
That's a good natural end for this segment. Is Austin Matthews the next Messiah?
Boy, he's really good. that's what Toronto's hoping for. I just hope that the Toronto media market does not do to him what it does to so many other guys. You know, Tyler Seguin and Phil Kessel and all these guys that were supposed to be these next incredible stars for them. I just hope he doesn't get eaten alive by that market. That's a really, really hard hockey market. I think in Toronto and Montreal, I think it's harder to win a Stanley Cup there than it is anywhere else because of just the unbelievable. I mean, I remember when I used to cover hockey and how much media would come from Canada when Toronto or Montreal was at the Garden. And the press box all but had to be expanded because there was so much media coverage. So, you know, it's really intense up there, and my only hope is he doesn't get eaten alive by that.
What is the most intense hockey fan base in this, in hockey? Is it Toronto?
I think Toronto is the most annoyed hockey fan base right now. I don't know, I think up in Canada, I think Montreal and Toronto are pretty close to each other in terms of passion.
Mm.
I think Rangers fans are up there. I really do. I think Boston fans are up there. Who else?
Let me ask it this way. What's the broadest base, the most fans that encompass someone's diehard fan base, if that question makes sense?
Yeah, I don't even know how to answer that. I mean, I think Toronto and Montreal and New York and Boston have the most passionate fans on the NHL. You know, I think those markets have fans. The thing that always amazed me about Rangers fans and about Toronto and Montreal to the same extent was, like, even if the team was bad, the fans still cared. You know, like, you see in a lot of sports, when a team is bad, nobody goes to the games, nobody watches on TV. You look at what happened with Ranger fans when they were bad and even Toronto fans right now, like, they're still selling out the Air Canada Center. The Bell Center was always being sold out. MSG had a sellout streak even when the team missed the postseason. So, you know, I think those are the most passionate fans. I have no idea how to quantify how many fans, though.
Yeah. Seth,
As always, thanks for coming on Teeing Up. It is much appreciated. And enjoy yourselves. Or, sorry, yourself. Sorry, you have not claimed yourself.
Yeah, I'm only one person.
Only one person, okay.
I'm only one person, but I appreciate it, Jeremy. Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, thank you for confirming that, because a whole bunch of breaking news people were about to reach out to you if you had said otherwise.
Sure they were.
See ya.
Adios.
Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next week.